Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go to bbc.co.uk/5live.
It's 3:22. James King, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Simon.
How are you? How are you, sir?
I'm good, thanks. You're right.
The interesting thing about Mark's absence this week is he's left you with some interesting films for a change, hasn't he?
I know. He's left me with a Woody Allen film, and he's a Woody Allen obsessive, as am I, so I don't understand why he's done that. He's left me with what I think is probably going to be one of the best films of the year and will win lots of awards this year. So, yeah, he's actually bucked the trend, and he's given me some good movies. Where is he, anyway?
Oh, I've got. I think he's enjoying some compulsory family time.
Oh, okay, yeah,
that kind of thing.
Yeah,
One of the films that we're talking about is Just Friends, and it stars Ryan Reynolds, who joins us. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you, sir?
Wonderful.
Have you had a good New Year so far?
So far, it's been rather uneventful, but that's so far is a good New Year. For
right.
Me.
What's been the high point of 2006 for you?
God, the high point of 2006.
Yeah, so far.
Oh, the 9-hour jet lag sleep I got last night arriving into London.
So you're on tip-top form.
Tip-top, my friend.
Okay, we're just going to do a top 10 box office thing here with James. He does, like, he'll do one sentence, pithy reviews.
Pithy is one word, yeah.
I love the spoken word pithy.
Okay,
wonderful.
Feel free to use it later.
I will.
If you have seen any of these films
and
feel as though you can express an opinion without compromising your position.
Understood.
Chip in. If there's a silence...
Yeah.
We'll move on.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay, box office top 10 in the UK this week. At 10, The Family Stone.
Which has a very good performance from Luke Wilson, who I really like in it, but the rest really didn't work for me. I found The Family Stone themselves really quite irritating. Ryan Reynolds.
You know what? I don't see it unless Sly is in it.
Yeah, that's the big weakness, isn't it? No Sly in The Family Stone.
Sly.
Don't go see it.
Yeah, exactly.
Number 9, March of the Penguins.
Which I think is brilliant.
Yes, I agree with that.
Lassie at 8.
Not as erotic as I wanted it.
What, Lassie? How erotic did you want Lassie to be?
No, March of the Penguins.
Oh, March of the Penguins.
There's a little bit of penguin sex in it, though.
There is a little bit of...
Enough.
Canoodle, really.
Don't spoil it.
Lassie, there's no such thing as that in Lassie. It's much cleaner and it's fun, but, I mean, really aimed at a very young audience.
Yeah, I have a pithy response of silence.
Dosti at 7.
Which I haven't seen.
Is it a Bollywood film?
It is, yeah. I haven't seen it.
The Producers at 6.
Which is fun, actually. I mean, I haven't seen the stage show, and I imagine the stage show is better because you have that interaction, because they're giving it so much in this movie. Nathan Lane, for example, is fantastic in this film. And in a live audience situation, you just think that must be amazing to feed off that energy that the performers have. Obviously, in the movie, because it's recorded, you don't have that kind of feeling. But you can still see that Nathan Lane is giving a great performance in The Producers.
Yep. I work with Bastard producers, so I don't need to go see them on film.
Good comment. Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire at 5, still hanging in there.
Yeah, doing very well. It's okay. I actually preferred the last Harry Potter movie, but I think this one is done better than that.
Never heard of it.
Cheaper by the Dozen 2 at 4.
Which isn't very good. What are you laughing about?
Well, I'm just going to no comment on that one, I think.
Okay, compromise.
Yeah.
Just Like Heaven at 3.
Which is okay. It's, you know... Okay, romantic comedy with Reese Witherspoon and Mark Ruffalo, who I think is a brilliant actor.
I do. I like Mark Ruffalo very much.
The Gorillas at 2?
Oh, right, sorry. I wondered what you meant there. I thought I haven't seen this film, The Gorilla.
No.
What's this?
King Kong.
Yeah, no, which I think is great.
Oh, God. Yeah, I haven't seen it. The last movie I saw in the theater, I think, was Top Gun. So I'm no use to this.
No, you're not.
It's terrible.
Now you tell us. Now we've finished the top 10.
Yeah.
There's The Gorilla at 2 and The Lion at 1. See?
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, which is all right. And people are really, you know, pitting these two against each other in terms of how much money they're making and awards and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. I actually think King Kong is the better movie, but Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe is doing incredibly well.
Yes. Yes, it is. It's number one, isn't it?
Yeah, I just said it's number one.
Oh, sorry.
There you go.
It's number one in the world as well.
Attention span of a gnat.
Have you seen it, Ryan?
No, like I said, I've seen nothing. I literally, it's the CNN scroll for me.
If only you told us that before we did that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to safer ground. Just Friends, one of the movies that opens out tomorrow. Give us the plot outline in a paragraph.
Oh, well, basically, it's about a young man who's in high school. He's a little bit overweight, and he's in love with his best friend, and she breaks his heart. And in reaction to this, he takes off and leaves town and spends the next 10 years sort of transforming himself into what he thinks this girl and the other people from his hometown want. And at great cost to his own personality, and comes back to town to get the girl.
So you're this character, Chris Brander.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. And this is made by the folk who did American Pie. Is that pretty much where we are? Is that what we need to know before we see it to know where this program is pitched?
Yeah, I have no idea why they do that as a marketing slant, but evidently they do. I guess it's just one way to bring in the kids, I suppose. But it's not that tone at all. I mean, it's very much more of a romantic comedy, whereas I think American Pie was more of just a romp about, masturbating on pies.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, thanks. Of course not.
Well,
we can all relate.
Well, I think, can I just point out that there would be many who'd say there might be something
absolutely
wrong with that.
Yeah, sorry, yes. This is my personal comment there. So we start in 1995 with this movie, don't we, when as you said, your character Chris is a geeky teenager. Because people won't have seen it yet. Just describe what he looks like, because it's quite a shocking appearance for people who know what you look like normally.
I suppose it's me if you were to add 12 pounds of chin fat. He's a little bit overweight, and he wears his heart on his sleeve, and that's something I loved about I loved about being that age, and I loved about playing that age again. And we find him at the beginning of the movie singing "I Swear" by All for One, which I believe was probably a top 10 hit around then, at the top of his lungs to the mirror in his bedroom.
And you're a leading man in this, obviously you're the main character, but you've said before that perhaps being the leading man, it puts a bit too much pressure on your shoulders, and sometimes you like working in an ensemble cast where you can be a fade into the background a little bit more.
Yeah, I love working in ensemble roles. It's much more satisfying for me, at least.
So you are a bit uncomfortable with this, Ryan?
No, I mean I love it, but suddenly it becomes a lot more about the economics of the films as opposed to just having a good time making it. So it's always a little bit more pressure when you're carrying a movie or you're the star of a movie. But when you're in an ensemble, it's just more about the work and making the best movie possible, and then you kind of let go and let God once you're done. So.
Who makes the best ensemble movies? Because you see them occasionally. Oh, we were going to talk about about the Woody Allen.
Yeah, well, Crimes and Misdemeanors, I think, is one of the best ensembles I've seen in ever. I mean, that's still one of my favorite movies. So,
yeah. Who makes the best ensemble films, James? Do you think?
Robert Altman, of course, is very famous for doing them. He did Gosford Park and MASH, amongst many others, and he does essentially just seem to let a lot of people get on with chatting and improvising. Yeah. And that takes quite some getting used to. But I think it does normally.
So are you defining ensemble then as lots of famous people? So if you've got a poster with about 20 stars on it, that's an ensemble piece.
You don't have to be famous, but essentially 20 people is perhaps a very large ensemble, but more than five leading people, then you're away. There's a very funny ice hockey scene in the movie, Ryan, that I think people will enjoy. Are you actually as bad at ice hockey as you are in this movie? Because it is possibly the most painful ice hockey game ever.
Indeed I am. Shameful for a Canadian. We're typically eased out of the womb wearing ice skates, and I was awful. I separated my shoulder the first day I got on the ice skates and under the ice. I think nothing is more entertaining than seeing a grown man, fumbling around on basically steak knives attached to his feet while attacking children.
And who was responsible for you dislocating your shoulder? Was it entirely self-imposed?
That was entirely my own fault. For accepting the role.
It sounds rather painful. Did someone put it straight back, or was that a day's filming lost?
Well, no, it was a day's filming lost, but I was begging the stunt coordinator to put it back in, but he wouldn't do it. So I ended up actually putting it back in myself, almost by accident, against the wall.
But people who might have seen you in Blade, they might be expecting something a bit stronger from an action man.
Yeah. You'd
come
think.
On. Yeah, stop stop wussing about.
Yeah, I know. Oh God. You have no idea the depths with which I can wuss out.
Maybe it's when you don't have the beard, because sometimes you're bearded, aren't you? You seem tougher with the beard.
Yeah,
in this, you're clean shaven. That's when you're a wuss.
Yeah, the last film I just did with a big beard as well, and I definitely felt like I manned it up a bit, And then, I shave and I go back to looking like a hobbit.
let's play a clip from one of the films out today. This is Just Friends with Ryan Reynolds. Just explain what we need to know about that clip, Ryan. What's going on there?
That's dating advice from the most jaded man alive. That's my character 10 years after he's had his heart broken by his best friend. And this is kind of where he's coming from, the wounded place with which he negotiates dating life.
What do we see in next, Ryan?
Smoke and Aces, which is what I think is a brilliant filmmaker named Joe Carnahan, who did a movie called Narc. And it's his follow-up to that, which I'm really excited about. It's not too often you get to work with a director that you're a huge fan of, so I'm really excited about
And how
that
much one. Chin fat do you have for that?
Absolutely none. Just chin hair in that one, okay. Thank God. I'll man it up for you.
All right. Ryan, thanks very much indeed for talking to us today.
My pleasure, guys. Thank
That's,
you.
That's Ryan Reynolds, who's in Just Friends. We'll talk about that. Plus, the other movie releases in just a moment. So Brokeback Mountain to come, Match Point and Running Scared. Your comments welcome, of course, 85058. Mayo at bbc.co.uk. 5 Live at 3:32. 5 Live. James King is here. We're talking movie reviews. Of course, the main attention this weekend, James, for most people, will be Brokeback Mountain. Yeah. There was a sort of a briefish interview with the director on Breakfast this morning, saying that originally he quite liked the gay cowboy tag because that immediately identifies it in people's minds, but he doesn't he's a bit grumpy about it now because it doesn't really capture everything that the movie's about. How accurate is that?
Well, I mean, I understand that because when I hear that phrase, I just think of something very camp. I think of that the cowboy from The Village People, you know, that
Yeah,
kind
I think
of
he
just,
was thinking of something Mel Brooks and Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, just very OTT, and it's really not like that. It's a very, very subtle movie, very slow movie. I think it's a fantastic film, and it's being talked about with Oscars. I think only today it got some more nominations for the Screen Actors Guild Awards, which is a big award ceremony, pre-Oscars, the Golden Globes, the BAFTA Awards on Monday. We get the nominations for them. This is really a big hopeful in 2006. And it stars Jake Gyllenhaal and Heath Ledger. The director you mentioned is Ang Lee. He's a great director. And the story is about this couple of ranch hands in the early 60s paired together to go up and work in the mountains of Montana. And they're up there for absolutely weeks, just the two of them. And when they're out there, something happens. They fall in love when they're out there. Now, they're not gay, or they didn't think they were gay. This is completely a surprise, but spending this time together, they realise that they're in love. And they come back and they carry on their lives. I mean, you know, they try to conform to what everyone expects. And they get married and they have children. But every year, they still meet up secretly and they're still continuing this affair. The movie is called Brokeback Mountain. It's Jake Gyllenhaal and Heath Ledger, you heard there. The movie is called Brokeback Mountain. So many good things about this. I can absolutely see why this is being mooted for all the awards. The main thing, though, and I guess this is why Ang Lee and Jake Gyllenhaal as well will be annoyed at this shorthand, it's the gay cowboy movie, is that actually, you could just call it a romantic cowboy movie, because that's the point, really. It's an incredibly romantic film. It's a great love story with all the ingredients you want from a love story. So you get the tragedy, you get the passion, the danger, the humour, all there. Two great performances, especially from Heath Ledger. He did sound a bit mumbly in that clip, and he is a bit mumbly, but when you see him on the screen as well, you can actually understand what he's saying a bit more rather than just listening to him. I mean, Heath Ledger is an actor who's been around for a while, and you've probably seen him in A Knight's Tale, Brothers Grimm, he was in recently. But now I think he's finally reached that point where he's going to be a huge star, and people can actually see that he is a really good actor, and I'm pretty sure that this is going to win him the Best Actor Oscar.
Him rather than Mr. Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal is good in it, don't get me wrong, he's very, very good, but I think part of the reason why you notice Heath Ledger so much is that he hasn't been that great in other films, whereas Jake Gyllenhaal's already had this hype about him from his other films, whereas with Heath Ledger, you're like, wow, he really yeah. can act, he really is quite good, because he's very moody in it, and he's got a lot of pent-up aggression, but as the film goes on, you really see those layers peeled away, and we get to see him as this real human being. He's not just the tough guy that he starts out being, he actually ends up as someone much more sensitive. Ang Lee, as I said, is the director. A good job from him. Perhaps a little bit too slow on occasions. If I had to pick it up anywhere, it's a very slowly paced movie, and so a couple of occasions perhaps it does need to just get on with things.
Is it quite preachy? Is it writ large, you know, tolerance?
Yeah.
Let's understand each other.
Well,
I think
you come out with that feeling, but it's not necessarily in the movie. There's not those big speeches. It is basically just to look at two people who fall in love and the society and how the society around them and how that society feels about them. But it certainly doesn't feel preachy, no. But I think you do come out with that feeling just because you really like these two people. They're such likeable characters and you just want them to be together. But because of society around them, they can't do what they want to do.
Was Ang Lee's last film, the Hulk movie?
It was, yeah, and he was uncomfortable
That's
doing
a
that.
Jump.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean,
it was rubbish as well.
Yeah, I mean, the movies he's done before, things like Sense and Sensibility, he did, and Ride with the Devil. I mean, he's much more into these character studies, really. I think Hulk was a bit of a jump for him, and he did try to make it as much of a character study as possible, but ultimately it was a big summer blockbuster that needed the action scenes in it. So this is him much more on familiar territory. And what he can do really well is expose attitudes, and it seems to, I mean, he's from Taiwan, I think, but you can seem to drop into any society and just pick up on the attitudes of that society and really show you how they work. And I think he's done it really well here.
Brokeback Mountain, one of the releases. More reviews to come, including Match Point and Running Scared. And also, you actually haven't said what you think about Just Friends. But anyway, we'll get to that in just a moment. 4:15. Paul in Hatfield, I have to say that to the makers of Brokeback Mountain, by way of an apology, really. I love films. I think Jake Gyllenhaal is a wonderful actor. Angley's visuals are stunning. I'm just not interested in the film about a couple of gay cowboys. But good luck with the Oscars, he says. Well, will there be some people who'd be thinking, not sure about
that. I think, yeah, this is a problem, which is probably part of the reason why Ang Lee is so annoyed that people are saying, hey, it's the gay cowboy movie, because as I said, it is, I would describe it primarily as a romantic movie, and lots of people go and see romances and they don't have an issue with it. And I think if you want to go and see a great romance, a great love story, forget the fact who it's actually about. I mean, that's obviously a huge part of the movie, but I don't think that's the primary thing about the film. The primary thing is it's about two people who fall in love. And, you know, lots of people like to go and see that in films.
Marcus in Renfrewshire, why is it that Brokeback Mountain seems to have upset the right-wing commentators in America? I can't wait to see this movie to find out what all the fuss is about. Was there a genuine fuss about it, or was it just one of those stories which gets written up because a couple of, you know, crazed people have said this is outrageous and undermining moral fabric of society?
I think there's been less of a fuss than people expected. I think there was a lot of expectation of fuss before the film actually came out. There's always some fuss with stories like this and with topics like this, but not as much. And actually, if you look at the box office of this movie, although it's not a huge blockbuster, it's not King Kong, it's doing incredibly well. And I think it's doing better than people expected, because they expected this to be a problem. They didn't, you know, expect people to say, look, I don't want to go and see a film about gay cowboys, but actually you look at the box office returns in the States, lots of people are going to see it.
Because it was the early Harry Potter films where apparently there was a big fuss, but actually when you examined it, Stephen Fry was making this point, there wasn't really a big fuss. It was a couple, you know, there were literally a couple of people who said it's an outrage that we're teaching our children witchcraft. But there wasn't a fuss. But it's always written up as though, you know, there's half of the country's up in
arms. It's people who haven't seen the film. Brokeback Mountain is a very measured, intelligent movie. As you asked, was it preachy? It's not preachy. It's just an intelligently done love story. What's controversial about that?
Okay, so that'll be one of the main movies of the week. What else is out, James?
Let's go from the sublime to the ridiculous, shall we? Let's talk about Running Scared, which is this thriller with Paul Walker. He's out of the Fast and the Furious. And he plays a gang member in this movie whose main job is to hide all his gang's weapons, to get rid of all the guns and the ammo. And he does that rather stupidly by hiding all these guns in his basement, which is a very big mistake, so that his son and his son's best mate discover all these guns. They steal one of them, use one of them to shoot the next door neighbour, and then go on the run. And basically Paul Walker has to track down this gun before the police get to it, and he gets found out as a gang member. And actually, because he's a gang member in the first place, you don't really care whether he gets caught or not. In fact, you quite like him to get caught. That's one of the main problems with the film. But anyway, but the basic problem is this: apart from the fact that Paul Walker is rubbish, I mean, he's a very good looking man. He's the Fast and the Furious, and he did a movie with Jessica Alba, Into the Blue, last year, you know, which is all about him being good looking. He can do that, but when it comes to acting, wooden, he's very, very wooden in this. But as I said, just because he is a bit of a sleazeball right from the beginning, you don't really care that he is running scared and that the police might catch him. You actually quite want him to be caught. Basically, the weird thing about this is it feels like a straight-to-DVD film, you know, one of those sort of dumbass action movies. And the only noticeable thing I can think of why they would release it at the cinema is that it's very OTT, the style. You know, the Matrix style and what the Matrix did to the style of movies, which was great and it made sense within that film. Well, in this, they've done that to the power of 100, and they seem to have gone completely over the top with it. So whenever you could just have a normal shot, they've gone for upside down, close up, slow motion, so over directed, really unnecessarily over directed. So I think that's probably the only thing to make it a bit more noticeable than the average straight to DVD movie. But essentially that style is to paper over the cracks, you know, is to try and make up for the fact that the story's rubbish.
Do you think that phrase straight to DVD, straight to video,
yep,
which always was always like the worst kind of criticism of any film, do you think as that time lag between movie release and it coming out on DVD, do you think it has the same kind of weight these days?
Well, I mean, definitely people and filmmakers are trying to make the straight-to-DVD market a bit more credible. And you now get films like, there was a sequel to Carlito's Way, which, you know, obviously a big, big hit movie with Al Pacino in the 90s. And they did a straight-to-DVD sequel, which actually they put some effort into. They said, look, we're not just going to do this rubbish. We are going to make this quite good. And I think there is now a concerted effort from filmmakers because, of course, the DVD market is bigger than the theatrical cinema market, so you can make more money out of the DVD than you can at the cinema. So I think now people are definitely trying to make more effort. Unfortunately, with Running Scared, they don't seem to have done that.
Right. So not only will the theatrical take be small, it's quite likely that the promise of seeing the theatrical trailer and the director's commentary is actually not much of an enticement either.
Who watches the trailers on DVDs? I mean, if it's an old movie, it's quite interesting. Maybe one you don't remember when it came out of the cinema. But why would you actually just want to have them?
Well, why would you actually sit through a director's commentary as well, which is just like someone talking all the way through a movie?
But they might have some insight. I mean, if it was Spielberg or someone did one, I'd love to hear what he had to say. But the trailer, I mean, the trailer's always the best bits anyway. Trailers are lies. They're never particularly representative of the movie.
Overwhelmingly, people don't watch the extras, do they? Not really.
I don't.
Six extra hours with lots of... The only one, I mean, we've mentioned this before, but the Love Actually director's commentary is an absolute joy, because not only have you got Mr. Curtis, but you've got Mr. Grant just being rude about absolutely everybody.
The Spinal Tap one is very good as well, because they're in character doing it, and that's very funny. But just the last thing about DVD commentaries is, who's heard the Meet the Parents one, I think it is, with Robert De Niro? Just appalling. I mean, how that man is the greatest actor alive, I don't know, because when he does DVD commentaries, he's terrible. He's so completely not wanting to be doing it and just mumbling his way through.
85058, mail@bbc.co.uk. If you've got any DVD commentaries that can top, I mean, we've only got 6 minutes, frankly, that can be better than either Spinal Tap or Love Actually. If there are any better ones out there, let us know, but you have to be darn quick. What else is out, James?
Match Point is out. Now, I've actually been banned by one of the producers here from saying this is a return to form for Woody Allen, because of course that's what everybody says about every new Woody Allen film over about the last 15 years. Actually, because this isn't, it's quite easy not to say that. The big deal that this is Woody Allen, obviously the quintessential New York director, making a movie in England. This is set in London and in the home counties, and it's about this tennis coach, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, who is a real social climber, really wants to mix with the upper classes, and he marries a rich girl, gets in with her family, gets a job in the city from her dad, and then he falls for Scarlett Johansson, who's playing this very mysterious, sexy American girl who's going out with Jonathan Rhys-Meyers' brother-in-law in the film, and he starts having an affair with her. And by falling for her, he starts to see all these carefully laid plans crumble around him, and he has to think of a way to get her out of his life. This is Match Point. It's Jonathan Rhys-Meyers and Scarlett Johansson in the new Woody Allen film, which is called Match Point.
You have to be quite bold to say, even to an actress as good as Scarlett Johansson, you're not such a great actress, you know, even in the course of a movie. But
she's very good at it, actually. I'd say that she's the best thing in it. Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, who's the guy you heard there, I actually interviewed him a couple of weeks ago, and he's you know, he's a nice guy. He's a very good interview, but I just always have issues with him on the screen.
Did you tell him that?
No, obviously.
No.
Because I'm that honest. But that haven't been resolved by this. You know, he was in Velvet Goldmine. He was in Bend It Like Beckham, Vanity Fair last year. And he just always seems to me to be... a bit wet, really. You know, he's very pouty and he's very pretty, but to play someone like in this movie, conniving, someone who's actually planning something and should be a real suave, roguish playboy character, he just doesn't pull it off, I don't think. You just don't buy into him. And he's, of course, the lead character. He's the one you meant to really attach yourself to. But I felt was just too wooden. The people around him, Scarlett Johansson, the person he has an affair with, is very good. She's very laid back. She's very seductive in it, and she can do that really well. Emily Mortimer is the girl that he marries, the rich girl that he marries. She's very good in it too. It's a very strong British supporting cast. But Jonathan Rhys-Meyers as the lead character, just for me, really lets it down, because he doesn't feel natural enough. And actually, because this is Woody Allen being serious, Woody Allen's not in this, and it's not Woody Allen being funny. That also feels a bit odd. I know he's done serious movies before, but I don't think ever to the success, the level of success that his comedy movies achieved.
So there is nobody that then, often if he's not in it, there is someone in there who you think you're playing the role of Woody Allen.
Yeah. Kenneth Branagh in Celebrity, and yeah, exactly. Well, not in this one. I mean, this is very not non-Woody Allen feeling, because not only is the setting different, but also it is a murder mystery. That's what it's about. And I feel that Woody Allen is a bit out of his depth. I mean, it's weird to say that, me saying that about Woody Allen, one of the greatest directors, who I think is fantastic.
I'm not sure you've got the right to say that.
I know, I don't even feel I've got the right to say it, Simon. But it doesn't feel like a natural movie for him. It does feel that he's trying to do something that isn't right for him, because the dialogue feels a bit stilted. His idea of England and London feels, you know, as someone who lives in London, it doesn't feel like the London I know. It feels
quite
odd.
Does London play a similar role to the role that New York has, you know, because obviously he loves New York, he knows New York, and he films it in a particular way. Is London a star of this?
Absolutely, and he does some beautiful shots of London, but it's also the London that you would expect a Hollywood or an American director to pick up on. So it's still the
Buckingham Palace and
the pretty sides, yeah, and the posh sides, and the, you know, of course, that is a very relevant part of London. But
he films New York in the same way. I mean, he doesn't normally do run down New York.
No, he doesn't. That's absolutely true. But I think the fuss that's being made about Woody Allen in London, it's going to be amazing. Actually, you see a London that hundreds of other American films have shown, and he's not doing anything particularly different. And the whole problem I have with it is that Jonathan Rhys-Meyers feels out of place, and Woody Allen, even though he's not in it, it feels wrong for him. This is not the kind of thing that he does particularly naturally. I think his comedies flow really well and feel really natural. This feels much more stilted and much more wooden.
We have 60 seconds left. How long would you like for Just Friends, because we were talking about it earlier with Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, no, I actually quite liked it. I thought it was fun. I mean, you mentioned the American Pie thing, and he said, well, it's the same producers, but that's about it. And it's not hugely similar to that, but it is in the fact that it's not about the story. You don't particularly have to worry about huge plot points in this. It is about people falling over and people being very silly and slapstick comedy. But I think Ryan Reynolds is a really interesting actor. He's often better than the movies he's in. You mentioned Blade Trinity that he was in, and he was in a remake of Amityville, and he was in a sort of a teen movie called Van Wilder, all of which are fine, but he is always really, really good in them because he always gives 110%, and he's doing that in Just Friends as well. So he really stands out, and I think if he continues being this good in movies, he should be a really big star.
You quite like Van Wilder, don't you?
Well, I mean, it serves a purpose, and I like it because of him. You know, I think that he always brightens up the movies that he's in because he has this very big personality.
So what, James, would you say is our movie of the week?
Easy, Simon. It's Brokeback Mountain. That's the one.
James, thanks very much indeed.
Cheers.
And I hope you have a fantastic weekend. We're back on.